Podcast Land, and welcome to another episode for the Front Row Network. We are again doing another Oscar spotlight. This spotlight is going to pay attention to a movie that is capturing audiences across every critic circle. It is number one on so many critics' lists. It won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, and it is a movie that is in serious Oscar contention. It's the first Korean film, South Korean film, to be nominated for Best Picture, and we are talking about Bong Joon-ho's Parasite. With me today is a Front Row contributor to Beyond the Mouse. Actually, we have two contributors to Beyond the Mouse. We have Mr. Brett Rutherford.
Hello there.
And Mr. Craig McFarlane.
Hey, we watch more than just Disney here.
Yeah, we get to our serious theater going, movie going hats on tonight. So
yeah, let's jump right into a movie that is definitely a more serious film. Parasite is the story of capitalism and social/class rank. It is a story of underclass family by the last name of Kim. And they struggle with their riches as they go day to day with their con life. They're constantly in the realm of con living. They have an opportunity to infiltrate a wealthy family and work for them. That family is the name of the Parks. And things seem to be going really, really well. They have infiltrated the Parks, and then all of a sudden, a rainstorm happens, both literally and figuratively. It's at that point when everything starts to fall apart, and we will go into that when we talk about our favorite scenes. But this is a movie that starts off as a comedy, then it goes into a drama, then it goes into a thriller, then it goes into all-out horror at the very end, and then back to drama. This is a movie that has it all. Bong Joon-ho has even called it a tragic comedy. So let's hear first thoughts. Brett, go ahead.
Well, again, I think going into it, I thought, well, this is a comedy. So, and then, as you said, it changed genres at the blink of an eye. And that kind of was just so well done, was very impressive to me. Another thing that I especially liked was the use of the production design, both as a symbol for various symbolism, sort of references as to class and social status, the journey of, well, how everything was, again, to the production design, how the Parks lived above everyone, you know, the journey the family takes to their job is literally uphill, probably both ways. But anyway, so I was just, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I mean, when you're reading subtitles and all this, which I, you know, certainly watched plenty of films and that have subtitles. It's kind of, it's an interesting journey because you don't have kind of the actors. And if you do not understand the language, you don't get the intonation and changes and other things that are clues to what's going on in the film. And so it's a little bit of a mystery when you're watching a foreign film. I was basically blown away.
I agree. I mean, this is a movie that definitely has you sitting down. You don't even realize that you're reading subtitles. Greg, what did you think after viewing?
Well, I just watched it this weekend, and I'm so glad because I didn't know really anything going into this film, and I kind of stayed that way. You know, it's been getting a lot of awards chatter for a long time. You mentioned it did really great things at Cannes, and so I listened to a lot of entertainment news and things like that, and everybody basically said, we don't want to ruin this movie for you. So I actually didn't even really know the plot of this. I knew that it wasn't like a literal parasite. That's the only thing I got out of, you know, it wasn't like going to be a movie like Contagion or something like that. But outside of that, I really had no clue. Even the synopsis you just read, and I know you weren't going into spoilers necessarily yet, and we definitely will go into spoilers later, but I just implore people, if you haven't seen this film, just go watch it because it is an incredible piece of art. And one of those where We're going to talk about its Oscars chances later, but I think it deserves all the recognition that it's getting. It's a fantastically done film, and just takes you on this entire like ride of emotions that, you know, and it keys into a lot of the social issues that are going on today in such a smart way, and not in a lot of Oscar contending films. Not so much this year. I think this year has a very strong plate of Oscar contenders, but generally they beat you over the head with whatever message they want you to get, you know, and, yep. And this has so much finesse and subtleness to what's going on. You can definitely take lots of little bits and pieces here and there. The overarching theme, of course, is a rich, poor dynamic. But there's so much more than that. It's not just a surface level movie. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I would say if you're one of those people out there that's scared of a foreign film because you're going to have to read it, it really doesn't detract at all from the movie. And I would say this is going to come out harsher than I want it to, but get over it because this is a really great film. And I would definitely suggest that you sit down and watch it. And if you're listening to this and haven't watched it yet, definitely don't listen to the spoilers beyond this point because it's one of those that I think it's much more impactful if you really don't know what's going on going into it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Actually, you know, Bong Joon-ho, when he released the trailers, he actually made sure that nothing from the second act was in the trailers. Everything in the trailer was from first the first half of the movie on. And then after it had won at Cannes, he went to every person there and he implored them. He stopped them. He goes, please do not take away from this film. This is a film that is going to catch you by surprise. And it certainly does in its third act. And he just says, please do not ruin this movie. And they didn't. I mean, I did not know a thing about the end of the movie. I just knew it was a movie about social structure and class structure. And this movie, like you said, does that with such finesse. It makes the movie so much more. And then when you get the twists, because there's three or four at the very end, and you're like, holy crap, what did I just watch? That last hour is fantastic. So as Craig said, if you haven't watched it, please stop now, because we are going to dive in to some key scenes here. First off, I want to talk about, I'll do the countdown. 3, 2, 1. How about the storm, guys? The literal storm and the figurative. These guys, the Kims, have infiltrated this family and they're living their high life. The Park family goes on vacation and these people are now in the house and something happens inside the house while a storm happens in the house while a storm is happening outside. So what I'm referring to is the old housekeeper comes and she implores to be let in because she needs to get something. Our first twist is that little do we, the audience, know is that this original housekeeper had her husband living in the basement because loan sharks were after him. He is someone who is suffering, you know, that wealth versus poverty. He is definitely in poverty. He tried to make ends meet by gambling and now he's in trouble. His wife saved him because she has a good job and she found out that the previous owner who built the house had built like a secret shelter. And that's where she was housing her husband from these loan sharks. So the Kims stumble across this and their cover's blown. And it is just a literal storm inside the house while a storm outside is happening. And that'll come into play later. But what do you guys think about that first big reveal?
Well, I would say even before we get there, and I know we're going to talk a bit about how smart he was about how they played this off, where like because people in society today, we rely so much on recommendation, right? Because yeah. We don't know what to trust. We don't necessarily have like that AAA gold standard type of system. There, it still exists, but we much more. Rely on, like, if I were to tell you, Ryan, hey, I know somebody in the Quad Cities that does this and they're great at it, that's what you're going to think about in that network of people and how it grows and grows and grows. And so they use that to their advantage to essentially take all these jobs and get the whole family employed. But what I thought was really interesting, first of all, I'm watching this and I just know that the family's going to come back from the camping trip. Like, it just has to happen, right?
It happens on I Love Lucy, so yeah.
Right, exactly. Like, but, you know, it's one of those, like, kind of film tropes, like, oh, they're having a party here. The people that own the house are going to come back. But that wasn't the problem. Like, that wasn't the huge twist,
right,
you know?
Right.
And I thought it was interesting, coming back to the class thing, the housekeeper had been fired. I'm assuming it was a couple of weeks prior to that. I can't remember exactly the passage of time, but she looks so disheveled. She has like a bloody lip. Yeah. And so we never know. We never learn what happened in that interim for her, because they do refer to her. They say something like, oh, I'm sure she got a good job. And they talk about Yoon, the driver, and they say, oh, I'm sure he got a good job. These people did not get jobs likely. It's talking about that disparity and that disparity in poverty. Did the old housekeeper run into the loan sharks that were after her husband? Is she just been struggling on the streets for the last couple of weeks? You never find out that piece of the story, but it certainly helps build that, that atmosphere around the whole movie just in an incredible way. So I would like, that's what I would want to comment on that particular scene. I'll let Brett dive into the actual rainfall and all that and everything that happens around that. But I just thought the setup to that scene was so beautifully done, and in a way that was really compelling. Didn't really drag. It brought in all these characters and really put you right in their place, in their shoes right away.
Yeah. Yeah. Brett, what do you think about that first reveal?
Well, about the rainstorm, I think, you know that the Kims have sort of a very humble life outside the world of the parks, but then you find out that someone has it worse than they do.
Yeah.
You know, and literally, you know, you are going, if they live sort of in a subterranean sort of apartment, they can look out windows, but now this person is living completely underground, both figuratively and literally. So that's, and then the struggle that they have, because they don't want to give up what they have. The Kims don't want to give up what they had. And now they're found out by the former housekeeper and her husband. And so the struggle continues. And it's interesting when you were saying the rain, what was just a slight inconvenience for the parks, mm-hmm. you know, celebrating
yep.
their son's birthday. Later on when the Kims, spoiler alert, when the Kims go back to their apartment in the rain, and they find that their apartment is completely flooded and there's sewage everywhere, and you know, it's
now they didn't make a direct connection to this. But we're assuming, my assumption was they said, they come back and one of them says like, oh, did we leave the window open? I'm assuming that it was the man that was peeing outside that saw that the rain was coming and opened their window. Like, is that too much to read into it? Or
certainly possibility.
Yeah, at least that's like, I kind of saw it as like a revenge because, you know,
especially
well,
there's lots
like
of revenge was, going on.
Right.
You know, when there's revenge all over the place. I mean, you know, when the Kims, you know, come upon some money and before all of them are hired, you know, they go celebrate by having pizza and kind of, well, bossing around the person who was their boss when they were folding
boxes.
You know, pizza boxes, you know, that there is revenge there, that it's kind of like, you know, they were. It was, and that's, I guess it's kind of throughout the film, is like, if you're deemed slightly lower than me socially or financially, you know, that they kind of hold it over the others, mm-hmm. at whatever status they're at. You know, the Kims were holding, you know, were being not so nice to, you know, the worker at the restaurant, you know, and mm-hmm. yeah, like, and then the whole smell issue that the parks have with
Mr.
people
Kim.
Of lower status, yeah. So,
well, it's really anybody, because it happens later on too, and that's kind of what sets off Mr. Kim towards the end there.
So, you know, like, I had this whole idea of like,
I'm so sorry.
No, it's all good. Let's talk.
So sorry. But it's one of those films where you just want to like get it all out there. But yeah, I mean, going back to your rainstorm idea here, it's just incredible how it does play with the rain really kind of flushing out all of this intrigue and putting them into this horrible spot. And then follow that by immediately the next day, the mother wakes up, the mom, Park, wakes up and just is like, oh, we're going to throw a party. It's going to be lovely. Right. We're going to get
so fresh out. Now there's no pollution and everything is even better than it was before.
Yeah, thank goodness for the rain. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. It was just, and so like these, all the Kims have to get up off the gym floor, figure out how to some way get their clothes. And they never really got into that. Yeah. And then get them all back over to this park. So just an incredible way to really have that, to turn that what was a kind of sort of like a horrible bosses, Knives Out type comedy where they're trying to weasel their way through this scheme and then really turn it on its head.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved the shot where he's running down the stairs. That shows his feet and he leaves and the water's still going. It's like, oh crap, they live in a basement. So this is not going to end well for them. I mean, that was a beautiful shot. So what I was going to do is I was going to talk about that first twist and then move into the characterization, talk about the two families and how they play off each other. But let's jump right into that because then I was going to use the next twist, which I kind of already talked about, which is fine. This is an open discussion. But the characterization of these two families, I mean, it is so brilliantly executed. They play off each other in such nuanced ways. It's very subtle. So first you have the Kims. They are con people. I mean, did anybody else get the impression of watching like The Riches or Shameless when you first were introduced to this family? Anybody else get that feeling?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's funny how like they go from like, first of all, you knew that they were kind of a shady family when the sister helps him forge his college transcript, his university transcript. And then the parents are all like, we're proud of you. Good luck. You know, it's just like the fact that, you know, like if one of us tried to pull that off, I doubt that we would go to say, hey, mom and dad, I'm going to go forge my way into this job. I don't think that we're going to do that. So it just is right from the beginning. It helps establish that family. Yeah.
Well, they're just wanting, it's about survival for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, it's a slippery slope depending on your situation as far as, you know, your morals. And, but they are kind of con people. It's like, you know, each person is introduced to the Park family, like, you know, I know this person that would be really good. And then, you know, that's how it, you know, oh, you're looking for, you know, a driver. And
so the way the con works out is you've got the Park son, I'm sorry, Kim's son, and he knows a guy by the name of Min. That's really easy to remember. But he goes, hey, I'm leaving, and I need a friend of mine. Like, I want somebody else to tutor this girl because I like her. And I want to be with her when she enters university. So I need a friend to not stab me in the back. That way I know that she's going to be in good hands, so to speak. So that's how he gets introduced to Parks. And then he's there. And probably the funniest thing in this whole movie, at least it's where I laugh the hardest, is he meets with the mom, who she is an airhead. I mean, she is gullible. She is just an airhead. They're looking at the son's painting and he goes, it's very abstract. He goes, is that a chimpanzee? The mom goes, no, self-portrait.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
well, you know.
Ryan, this is going to be one of those times when you hate me. Cause I'm just like, was thinking through in my mind and this just came up. If you think about it, like, yes, they are a con family, but obviously, the son has some level of English that he's able to then tutor, you know, like he's able to do that. The wife had, or the mother has, been a housekeeper before. The father obviously has some skill with driving because he's kind of put to the test.
Right.
Is the only one that's kind of truly faking it the daughter?
Yeah. But then again, she's good with the computer.
Yeah.
And connect to that, you know, and again, people shouldn't be listening at this point, but the only one that doesn't survive this movie is the one that was truly faking it.
Yeah. She's the one that goes first. She's the one that gets it in the most violent way.
Yeah. So it's just interesting to me. Like the truly, like if you were to rate this family as far as cons, like the one that is truly like scamming this family beyond, because she's like, I Googled, you know, art therapy and this is what came up. She's the one that goes. So it's I don't know.
She went to ISU, to happen? You know.
Yeah, she ISU represents. ISU.
I like that.
You know, she's an art major at ISU. Well, that makes sense. You know, I'm like going, it's known for its art, you know, there.
But it's so funny that Illinois State is the school that he grabbed for that. Like, it's just really funny. But no, I just came that put two and two. And again, I'm maybe reading into this too much, but
maybe
that's an interesting connection. Thanks, Brett.
Well, I'm just like going, well, no, I think what's interesting with especially, but foreign films, you bring your own ideas and such because, you know, you're reading the subtitles, you know, you're gathering the information, you know, you're viewing and it's through your lens and your life and your experience. So I think more than films that are in our instance would be an English language film, it's all kind of spelled out in front of us. And there's a little ambiguity and mystery in this. So I think it's perfectly fine, you know, that you are delving into layers that you see in this. So, you know, it's completely open to interpretation. So,
well, thank you, Brett. I think you
How's
would make
that?
a good therapist, maybe.
Well, I'm an art therapist from, you know, my degree is from, well, no, it's not, but anyway.
Did I see you at ISU?
Yes. You know, I have been to ISU, you know.
So. Are you from?
Yeah, it's just up the road.
But I think, well, you know, and I really won't comment any further about your thoughts there because I differ. But anyway, but I think, I mean, well, she was the fakiest of the fake, but I'm like going, she wasn't the meanest because I'm like going, you know, the whole peach thing, you know, let me just rub peaches all over you and, you know,
yeah. Or
let me get a gun and let me, you know, I think no one is innocent in that. Excuse me.
Oh no, they're all definitely scamming. You know, it's just it just occurred to me that maybe they all actually possess the skill they were scamming about, except for one. So that's all.
I mean, this is a family. I mean, it's like what you said. What level of con they're good at? You know, it's amazing when they're preparing to infiltrate this house, which is the first hour of this movie. You know, you see the dad rehearsing. The son is coaching him, you know, and I think the son is probably the best at con. Like, I think he's more well-versed. I think he helps the family a lot. But I think they all bring something to the table. But when you look at them compared to the Parks, it's just spoon-fed. I mean, I think the one person that's a realist in that family is the son of the Park family. The wife is very gullible. She, you know, she's easy to sway. The daughter is very naive, and you have the dad who's just very, man, I'm just gonna, you know, spend money and let this go. He just doesn't care because he has money. What are you guys' thoughts just about the two dynamics of the families? I mean,
well, they're rich. They can be nice. You know, what is the line? You know, they're rich. They can be nice.
Yeah.
It can be nice. It's a choice for them, you know. For us, we have to survive, so we can't be as nice as we would maybe want to be. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I really can't stand the dad because he comes off as that, like, very rich, very disconnected, like, doesn't care about his kid, doesn't care about his wife, just she's there. You know, that, like, it falls into like those stereotypes of like the traditional rich dude that is disconnected from his family. Now, granted, he's doing work as well, so his family can live that way. So, I mean, again, coming back to Brett's point about survival, like obviously they're affluent and they're wealthy. They're doing really well, but that is his work that has done that. So, I mean, I don't fault that portion of it. It's just in the movie, he comes off as a very cold character and he's supposed to, right? Right. And he's also the one that initially brings up the smell. And yep. I think that the smell is the most dehumanizing thing about this movie. And so that's where this kind of like eat the rich mentality that comes towards the end of the film, you know, it's harder to feel sympathy for him when he's walking away and like smells the it's just that moment of like
breaking.
And it's obviously like the worst thing that you can do is dehumanize someone. Right. And so that's what that's doing.
But and he does it without even thinking. It's just natural for him.
Well, maybe they, okay. I don't live in the smelling world. I have no sense of smell.
That's so true.
So the idea of someone, you know, if someone just happens to mention something to me about someone, perhaps needing, you know, more fastidious duties as far as, you know, keeping themselves clean. Say someone said they always smell. I'm like, going to me, because I don't live in that world, it's like horrendously bad, because I think, oh my gosh, that would be just so bad to have people talk about that and for that to be. So I take lots of showers, but anyway. it was interesting, you know, in a non-smelling sort of world, that I'm like going, you know, that's just how bad can that be? So yeah.
Anyway, yeah. And you know, minor like point. there's something too, like, you know, obviously there's, I worked with someone, Ryan may have too, that had, like legitimate, like medical condition where he did, smell. But like, this is done in a way where it's like, oh, you know, that smell that all of them have, you know, like it's very much like, yeah, it's done like, yeah, kind of
true,
categorizing swath, like wide swaths of people to this. So that's how
it also could give them away. Wife. You mm-hmm. know, it, I think that, you know, so they try to take care of that, you know, that they can't smell alike because they don't really know each other, at least according to their stories.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. So I think that the family dynamic is painted well here, and I, for the most part, can't really stand the Parks, even though I know I shouldn't necessarily be rooting on the Kims.
Well, right. See, that's the best part of the whole movie, and I'll get that to when I pose the question. But you don't know who to root for in this movie. You have no idea who you're cheering for, and that's what makes this movie so brilliant.
It's probably Mama Park. That's who I'm rooting for in this movie, because that poor lady seemingly is trapped. She needs a release, and she's trying hard. She's way too wound up, considering that they have all the money in the world. So she needs some good therapy, and she would have been okay. Now she's going to need a lot more therapy.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Kim's character arcs, because or just their family arc as a whole. I mean, Bong Joon-ho really said that this is a movie about families, and he does a lot of wide angles so you can get the family all in one shot. So this is a family who, at the very beginning, they were given a rock, and the rock was, oh, you're going to have wealth after this. You know, this is going to bring you good fortune. And it's at that time that they all start infiltrating the Park family as jobs for the Park, you know, whether it be two tutors, a housekeeper, and a driver. Now, these guys went about and, you know, conned their way in, one with allegations of the driver being a sex addict and doing it in the car. And the Mr. Park did not like that. And then, of course, the whole Peaches thing. So we have this family. They're now in. They're infiltrated. And that scene right before all chaos breaks out, where they're sitting there drinking the whiskey, And they're questioning their lives almost. And the dad gets real angry. I think that's a very key scene because it's right when everything falls apart. Because they're questioning, like, is this it? Do you guys have any thoughts about that scene, or that scene at the table before everything falls apart?
Oh, well, it made me nervous in the sort of I Love Lucy sort of way. I'm like going, oh, no, oh, no, here it comes.
Being too comfortable.
I'm like going, oh, no, they're, you know, I mean, you know, it's a mess. You know, they are not cleaning up after themselves and what, you know. And then, of course, you get the Ricky's coming home, you know, sort of story. So that's when it turns on its head there. That's really when does. Everything changes, you know. We're going to be home soon. And then, you know,
These are smart people. How do they not assume that the rich, affluent family is not going to end up camping their butts outside in that rainstorm? Like, you see it start raining and to me, I'd be like, oh man, we got to get this stuff clean. You know, like
clean up, you know,
or just clean up before even the nighttime like happens. Were they all planning? I guess they were all planning on staying there, which is fine. Yeah. But again, like, there's so many variables there. And then I also thought, like, in this, they obviously have a door cam, but like, they don't have any nanny cams in that house, in this huge, like, you know, million-dollar home. That was like one of the blind spots of the movie for me. It's kind of like when you try to introduce cell phones into Home Alone, that movie falls apart. Like, where were the nanny cams, you know?
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's like they got too comfortable. Like, they had achieved the status they wanted and they were comfortable with it. Yeah, they had to keep this ruse up, but they were living the life that they had wanted. Now, granted, it was at the expense of other, and they were being parasites and latching on to the Park family, but for them it worked. Well, and then they get a ring on the doorbell. It's the old housekeeper. She answers. We've already gone into this. But before all that falls apart, she's just pleading to Mrs. Kim to take this money and feed him. You know, she said she cut the garage cam so that way in case she wants to get her husband out of there. But then one of the kids falls down the steps, and that's where everything just goes to waste, because at that time they get a call, hey, we're coming, and then all chaos breaks loose. We've already kind of hit on it.
My second question mark, Ryan, you just asked it. How does he fall down the stairs? I missed that.
Her foot slips. So it's the daughter, and they're standing there listening to this exchange. It's the three Kims on the stairwell. Mama Kim is down with the old housekeeper and her husband, and they're listening, but they're trying to tell her, no, get out. You know, I'm going to tell. And then her foot slips on a stair, and they all fall down. And the housekeeper's like, ha, I got you now. And so it just gets to be this battle.
Right. Of I just never saw, for whatever reason, it was such a split second thing. I didn't really see how the falling into the hallway happened. And then I saw like the sun was writhing on the ground. So I was like, was it him that fell? Like, I was just confused. I was confused by that whole thing. I have a third confusing point that I will bring up later.
Okay.
Was she lunging to get the phone that had the evidence that she was recording them?
When they were fighting. The maid's got them on the rope. So she's got them upstairs, husband's upstairs, then they fight again. So that's when they lunge after the phone.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's
when I was reading subtitles, so anyway.
That's when they get right, I think that was why I missed some of those like really brief moments.
Yeah. And it all happens so fast too. So
mm-hmm. Well, yeah, she gets them on the ropes and she's got them on camera. She's up there, you know, massaging her husband. She's living the life, and good for her. You know, she deserves it. And they're off in the corner saying, yeah, I'm a father, I'm a son. You know, their cover is blown. And then they start to fantasize about what their life would be like. You know, it's almost like they're doing exactly what the Kims did. And that's when the Kims sees the advantage and start to fight. But it gets broken up when there's a phone call saying, it's the Parks. Hey, we're coming home. So it's like you said, that I Love Lucy episode. Everybody is scrambling. The daughter's chucking stuff off the table. I mean, this scene is just pure chaos. And it gets to the point where everybody's hiding underneath the table while the sun is outside. It's not raining anymore. Well, it's still raining, but he's sleeping. And just that scene is just so cringeworthy to watch. But because it's so thrilling. How do you guys feel about the tension in that scene?
That was great. I'm like going, yeah. are they going to get caught? Is this the end of the film? Are they going to get caught? And, you know, they know there was so much more to happen that they got away.
Well, they had to have this film did have a couple of those tropes where it's like, of course they had to have sex, like right when, you know, everybody else is underneath the table, like that had to happen. you know, and it was done again. Like I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. It just like, there were a couple of these that were like thrown in there. As kind of like, oh yeah, well, this is what would happen, of course.
That would be uncomfortable to be, you know, underneath the coffee table when, you know, when well, I think, you know, I mean, are we going to talk like, well, I didn't really, I don't know. I mean, some of the reviews and some of the, I mean, it's totally, you know, a class system and how, you know, how the parks are, you know, their success is built on, you know, on the Kims, you know, pushing, you know, them down to their level. And I'm like going, I didn't see it as that. Again, you know, everyone is kind of open. I feel everyone is kind of open to their own interpretation because, you know, because of the language issue, but you know, it's just the struggle. I mean, the struggle for everyone in this film, you know, this, I think, you know, the parks don't have, you know, the struggles that the others do, but you know, are they happy? You know, is she, I mean, she's, I'm the mother is living this. I mean, what kind of an existence, you know, I'm like, it's rather superficial and all this. So that's a struggle, you know?
Right. And you know, so you don't get that much through the film. Like you don't get their side of it.
No, this kind of leads me to the next question I have for you guys. These guys escape, but the old housekeeper is a casualty. She gets kicked down the stairs in the melee, but she's able to free her husband. They go home. They find out the raining has flooded their sub-basement part. Sewage is coming up. You know, it's just a disaster for these guys. It's almost to their breaking point. But the very next day, the parks wake up and they're like, hey, let's have a party. And guess who they call to come to work? The Kims.
Yeah.
So two things I really want to talk about here are when the son, the Kim's son, is talking to the park's daughter, who they have gotten romantically involved, and he asks her a very simple question. Do I fit in? And that is just so profoundly amazing. Just the way that it's framed. Mm-hmm. They're out looking the backyard. What do you guys feel about that scene? Like, how did it strike you? No one?
Yeah. I mean, that's, that's kind of, well, that was, you know, he has aspirations to rise above his situation. And as the film progresses, even into the end towards the, I guess, quasi fantasy scene, you know, he has this rock, my gosh, you know, he carries the rock everywhere.
I think he wanted it the most. You know?
Yeah. He wants to better himself. So, at whatever expense, but yeah, asking the question, do I fit in? You know, well, that's a big question for everyone, but you know,
right. He's super into a high school sophomore. And I don't know, like Korean.
Well, she is a horny teenager. You know, I think whoever her tutor was, it would be, oh, he's the cutest thing. Oh my gosh, I'm in love with him.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't know ages in the Korean system necessarily, but I imagine that that's not cool.
It would still be. Yeah. So but to luck about bombshell. Anyway.
Yeah. This leads me now. Are we going to talk about the like pandemonium scene as a separate thing? Okay. Yep. I will not ask my final question then.
Final question.
But I will say that, you know, like that whole party setup is really interesting because that's when Mama Kim or Mama Park is in the backseat of the car and she rolls down the window because of the smell of Mr. Kim. Who had just went through this whole like horrendous, like losing your house kind of situation.
Yeah.
And like, how can he do any better? And then the Mama Kim is putting up these tables and the dad, Dad Park is like, hey, our son's sleeping, you know, can you be really quiet? And like, just like they don't fit into this world. Like they don't, like those people are like the Parks are so oblivious to what the situation that's going on. Now, granted, they don't know either.
No.
Like they don't, obviously they're getting scammed at this point. They don't know this is a whole family that just went through a tragedy, but they show very little empathy throughout the film for the help. Right. So it is. It's an interesting way to
like what they want them to be best friends. I don't know. They treat them until, I mean, Mr. Park has, I think he has sort of boundaries. And when his driver is asking too many questions, I mean, if
he does say that,
that's just, I mean, you know, it's about boundaries. Well, wouldn't if your boss tells you, you know, I can put up with a lot, but this is what I don't like at all. And then he just kind of goes there. I mean, you know, in an employee employer situation, I mean, that wasn't a bright thing to do. So I think we project, oh, he's that, you know, or he's, you know, a nasty rich capitalist, you know, pig or whatever, you know, and I'm like going, you know, they're just,
we definitely
their
get
employers.
To see the full story. Yeah, for sure.
You know, they're employers, you know, and apparently Mrs. Kim really loves peaches. So I feel sorry for her when she, you know, did not have peaches just because, you know, her housekeeper is allergic to them.
Yep.
And how did they know that anyway? I'm like, wait, did she say I'm allergic to
peaches? She must have said, like, because the housekeeper came with the house, right?
You know, I'm like going, let me rub peaches all over you.
Craig, you brought up a point. While he's asking this question, his mom and dad and his sibling all have to do their jobs after experiencing a night of grueling hell. Their whole apartment is flooded with sewage water. They're literally neck deep. They've lost everything, and yet they have to go back to work. The daughter is required to bring out the cake and play a role of a damsel in distress. The mom has to set up the tables. The father has to be an Indian and act like he's going to do this. And it even gets to the point where Mr. Park says, this is your job. This is what I'm paying you for. And it's just, it's really eye-opening because they're unempathetic. Like, they just don't ask, like, hey, how's your life going? They don't realize that these people have gone through, you know, hell and back, and they're still in hell.
Well, there's obvious signs of them having had some kind of trauma, and like even without them noticing it. And I totally get where Brett's coming from because, you know, this is still a new relationship for all of them too. Like these are new employees for the most part. And so I understand where it is a transactional relationship, but we don't get to see the Parks outside of this unempathetic state. We don't get to see the mom like organizing for some kind of social community house or something like that. We don't get to see the dad and what he's actually doing at work. And like, is he doing something that gives him some kind of redeeming quality? So I totally get that. Like I think we probably are projecting a bit. We want more empathy from these people, but we're not supposed to be.
We're not going
to
get it.
You know? It's kind of built. It's probably built into, the director's plan, you know, they're
Definitely.
It is really more the Kim story than anyone else, you know, obviously.
So can we talk about the crazy? Yeah.
We're hitting it right now. So we're here. We're at the next big twist in the movie. The son with his rock decides to go down and kind of make things right. I shouldn't say make things right. What was he doing? He was just going down there, right? Like, what was his motive?
I don't know.
He was just kind of in a daze. Like, it was just kind of, you know.
Well, yeah. I'm going to carry my rock with me now.
I think the trauma hit him the most.
My thought was he was going to free the husband.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
That's
going to come clean. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he goes down there. Well, he did not know that before the old housekeeper succumbed to her concussions, she freed her husband. He was trying to alert people that he was down there by tripping sensors with his forehead. And in a great moment of thriller, the son is bending over to check on the comatose, I want to say dead housekeeper, and you see a noose go around his neck. I mean, pure Hitchcockian, so good. But then it just a pure struggle. He tries to escape. He's almost there, but he drops his rock. He's all the way at the top of the stairs, and the old housekeeper's husband, bloody face, grabs the rock and just goes to town. So, I mean, it's just crazy because then it's he beats him over the head with his fortune. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah. Time out. No. My third problem with the film. Yeah. How in the hell does the son survive this? We actually see in almost like a comedic way, we see the husband of the former housekeeper pick up the rock and throw it against the dude's head, and it bounces off of him.
And like he fidgets too, like he's and
there's all fidgeting. Sorts of blood everywhere. Yeah. There is absolutely no way that later this man survives this.
Later on, they say he has brain surgery, and he almost has the condition that Fleck has in Joker. He laughs a lot. So I mean, I guess that's a cop out, but
there's absolutely no way.
Suspension,
of disbelief.
You're right. But there's no way that he survives that.
He does.
Okay, Dr. Craig, okay. There's no way. 100% chance of rain tomorrow. Uh-huh.
Yeah, hope you don't live in a basement.
You know. Okay. Sorry. The banter continues, Craig. Sorry. It's my turn.
I know. Anyway. That's been coming at me all day.
What?
So move on. We have now reached full horror mode. Earlier in the film, we find out that the son had his last birthday, ate cake, and saw a ghost. Well, it was old housekeeper's husband. He comes up every once in a while. So he had a seizure, and that's how he turned to the art. But that's kind of irrelevant at this point. I guess it's not, because that's how the daughter gets in the picture. But he's free, and he grabs a knife, and he just goes out, and he just goes to town. His first target is the Kim daughter. She's stabbed in the chest. The son sees this bloody figure and collapses because it's his ghost again, has a seizure. And then he just, you know, he goes on the rampage. He doesn't really kill anybody else, but he like slashes at people. There's blood flying. I mean, this is full horror mode. It is crazy, the chaos in this scene. I'm not going to say anymore. I'll let you guys talk more about it. But Brett, what do you think about this last big twist, this horror twist?
Again, I'm like going, what? We're changing genres again, or at least upping the ante big time. Yeah. You know, what are we to feel? I mean, it's, and I don't know. I think it's coming to an end here, and so you know, so old housekeeper's husband, you know, starts the rampage, and then. And then the Kim father really takes it to the next level when he, after he's triggered by the smell, and he goes after Mr. Park, and the garden party comes to a spectacularly sad or tragic and violent ending there. So. Oops, there it is.
That's spectacularly.
Greg, what do you think?
You know, the whole culmination at that point, it does get, it goes nearly full Tarantino. It's just in this movie that continues to surprise you. It's shocking because, like you said, it changes genres on the fly. It's just a good way to, start to wrap up this film. And then of course, the whole joke of it all is that Mr. Kim ends up being the man in the basement, right?
Yep,
so
yep.
He ends up trading places with the former housekeeper's husband, who has been down there for 4 years. And now the dream or the fantasy of the son to make all this money when he doesn't have a degree. He hasn't gone to any kind of formal education, which is fine. You can still make money not doing that. But he also is on probation from the law for having been in this nationally televised incident. Like there's no way that anyone's going to hire him, you know? Right. So that's kind of the joke of that fantasy scene at the end with with him buying the house and the dad coming in. So just all around, kind of a well done way to wrap up the film.
Yeah. I mean, that's the end of the film. I mean, you know, the old housekeeper's former housekeeper's husband is killed with a skewer. Mr. Ken throws the keys to Mr. Park. He goes to get them, but they're by the body. So he sniffs, he cracks, and he stabs Mr. Park, killing him, and runs off. We find out that he is the man in the basement. And I don't know. There's this thing with Morse code and the light, with the former housekeeper's husband. He was trying to send messages to the young boy. But I almost want to say it's fantasy. It's all fantasy. I honestly think he dies down there, and it's just this kid holding on to hope. And because at the end of the movie, when he's looking, and just that final scene, him looking at the camera, it's just so haunting. It almost you don't know what to believe. So Craig, what are your thoughts?
Well, that's when it doesn't get, I guess it's a little confusing, a little. But to just what is real and what's not. And there's plenty of YouTube videos out there that says that explain the ending to Parasite. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's pretty clear that that it's this dream state or this fantasy sort of thing. And then we're snapped back into the reality. But, the references that the director, you know, has to both Hitchcock and the happy ending, you know, the canned happy ending is a Robert Altman, sort of thing, you know, from, The Player, you know, so, but he does bring us back into, you know, the reality. So, but it's very interesting, you know, all of the other references. And the other thing, the looking out windows, as in Rear Window, there's a lot of looking out of windows.
There's definitely a motif of
windows. I know. Sorry, that was a little bit of a
tangent. No, that's perfect.
Sorry, but that's kind of what I do on occasion. So,
no, I love
it. Topic. Okay.
So, before we dive into that, pretty much sums up the movie. So before we dive into the 6 Oscar nominations, I read an article where Bong Joon-ho was questioned. He had a lot of things to say about family and things like that. And the movie's called Parasite, and Parasite is something that latches onto something and sucks the life out of it or makes it worse. But he posed a question. He goes, this movie is meant for you to see the film in one of two ways. And he goes, which family is the parasite? Is it the Kim family that latches itself onto the Park family to get that lap of luxury, to get that wealth and that sense of comfort? Or is the parasite the Park family, who uses the everyday workforce and doesn't really care about who they are? They just want them to be their employees and to use them to the point where they're expendable. So that is a very poignant question. I'm going to start with Craig. I want to hear Craig's thoughts on this. Who are the parasites?
I might steal Brett's thunder here a bit, but he's got me thinking a lot about this empathy question and this like workforce question. I don't think we have enough information to say that the Parks are the parasite. I think it's easy to say, like, again, that whole eat the rich mentality, like very much like they should have been nicer. They should have been this. They should have done this. But we don't have enough context to be able to say that. It's very clear that the Kims bring the whole world crashing down, and they build on it like piece by piece. You know, they get the son as the tutor. They get the daughter as the art therapist. They get the husband as the driver. They get the mom as the housekeeper. Like, so it truly is like they're building on this. And then their whole world starts to crash down too, just based off of like essentially instances that they can't help. And there are obviously societal questions, and there are big social class identifications in this movie. But I think, you know, and maybe even coming into this conversation, I was harder on the Parks than I should have been.
We do
lack a bit of context there.
Brett, what are your thoughts?
Oh, well, my thought. Well, I agree with Craig now that I've changed his opinion. No, I mean, clearly, I don't know if it was necessarily, I think the way, possibly the way, I think the, was that a, the question the director yeah. had, you know, who is the parasite? Well, I think he probably wanted us to have more feelings towards the Kim family, you know, that might have been more of a political statement on his point. But actually, I believe that the Kims are the parasites because they eventually kill the hosts. So I'm like, well, clearly they are the parasites, you know, to a certain level. But yeah, anyway, you know, they're killing the hosts, the people that, you know, yeah. So, or at least, you know, the father. So it's the host. So
yeah,
are my thoughts. You know,
I'll just read this. He goes, obviously parasites infiltrate. That leaves the question of whether or not it's the poor family that are the parasite. Is this the case? The rich family in some ways exploits the poor, especially in terms of labor. You can say that both families are parasites. But he's definitely wanting you to beg the question, who do you think? He wants you to form your own opinion. Yeah, I can see it both ways, but I definitely think that the Kims are the ones that, you know, they're the ones that are trying to get better class standing. I mean, they want to get the money, and they're going to go any way that they can because they live in such, you know, poverty.
Yeah.
What a great movie. We're going to segue right into the awards. Like I said earlier, it is on top 10 lists up the yin yang, more so than 1917. It is also won best foreign language film at the Golden Globes, not to be confused with best international the Oscar category. But first thing that has ever happened at the SAG Awards is the cast, which this cast was incredible, won the first best ensemble, best foreign language to do so. That cast was it was incredible. I wish there were some acting nods for this movie, but unfortunately they're not, because the father of the Kims definitely should have been nominated. But the film is nominated for 3 technical awards and then 3 of the bigger awards. So it was film editing, production design, and then we've got best international film, best screenplay, best director, and best picture. Let's talk about film editing. I'm going to go first here. I think this movie is very seamless, and I think it works in a way because of the film editing. No, you're never left unsatisfied. Each scene is very well planned, but the editing makes that seamless transition. I mean, if it's not one thing, it's the other. You know, you go from seeing feet on a stairway, keeping it there, to them running down the stairs. I mean, really well done. Do I think that this is going to win best film editing? I don't think so. But it's definitely deserving. Craig, what do you think?
It's just hard for me to like look past the other nominees. I understand why it was nominated. But you know, with 1917 glaring its head there, there's no way that a film that was edited into a one shot, is going to, not win that category. But
1917 wasn't nominated though.
Was it not nominated for editing? Was it? Oh, so it was cinematography that they counted the one shot for?
Yep.
Oh, well, all right. Well, then maybe. Well, heck, I don't know my Oscar categories.
I'm gonna pull it up real quick. Oh, nope, you're right. Nope, that's sound editing. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Hold on. Okay, Ford versus Ferrari, Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, and Joker. That's who it's up against for film editing.
Well, Joker should win nothing. So I haven't seen the car movie yet. Maybe that'll.
What?
But no, it's
well, it's a car movie, so those
Ford
those
versus Ferrari is pretty seamless. Yeah, Brett, what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, I think I again speak to the production design because you know, like sometimes with costuming, if it's a period piece, you know that they get more Oscar love, and production design. Sometimes, I mean, there was a lot of talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood because it captures the late 1960s Hollywood so succinctly. But if you're talking about production design and how production serves the piece, the conversations that the production design team and the director, they must have had such detail because of all of the symbolism that is in the sets and in the production design is just phenomenal. It's just layers and layers and layers. Strata, strata, strata. Stairs, stairs, stairs. Levels, yeah, levels.
So
levels.
Many stairs.
You get it?
Yes. Yeah.
And just when you think, yeah, again, when you think that the Kims have it bad, there's someone who lives, you know, in the dark downstairs, or at least, you know. So I'm like going, someone who's worse off than they are. So Yeah. I just think the production design is amazing. And the house is gorgeous, and it wasn't even a real house.
Yeah, it was built for the movie. That's crazy.
You know? I'm like going, it's like the house in Sleeping with the Enemy, you know, is built. And it's this yep. gorgeous house that, you know, is left to rot when it's over, you know? So it's like a gorgeous house. So, and, you know, the fictionalized architect, the history of you know, this amazing house, and, you know, which sort, I mean, that just sort of, you know, leads to the exclusivity of and the financial wealth of the parks, but, you know, just the production design is amazing. So anyway, those are my thoughts on production design.
Okay.
You know, I'm like going, I don't know. I think it should win. I think it should win for production design, because I'm like going, as interesting as the others are, I'm like going, there's so much thought to this. So it's yeah. so well executed. So.
Craig, both, everything well, that both. Brett said is great.
Yeah. I mean, this is a movie that's going to be up against The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, 1917, Once Upon a Time. And I you know, the house was built. This house was beautiful. And the fact that they made it for this film is even more spectacular.
But and the finishes that they would use, I mean, gosh.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Look at how they use that in contrast to where the Kims were living. I mean,
yeah,
they really hit it, like, visually with, you know, in terms of production design, you know who's rich and you know who's poor. But, you know, it's like you said with the stairs, there's a lot more stairs. You know, these guys are at the bottom of the barrel, the Kims are. And they have to go up this giant stone staircase to even get to the street where these guys are on. And, you know, even then, to get to the house, you have to go up stairs to get to the garden. I mean, everything about this production design, I mean, that bay of windows, beautiful. I mean, yeah. everything was great, including the bunker. So, Parasite, I think it's gonna be close to 1917 and Once Upon a Time, to be honest. I would love to
see Parasite win. Yeah, I think so, too.
But between those three, it's going to be crapshoot. Be crazy.
If I had to guess, it'll be Once Upon a Time that takes out, because period piece, and they nailed the 60s look. They nailed the Manson family and yeah. Spahn Ranch. So that would be my guess.
Yeah. So the Oscars have officially changed Best Foreign Language to now Best International Film. This movie is going against the Polish film Corpus Christi, the Turkish and Macedonian film Honeyland, France's Les Mis, Spain's Pain and Glory, which has Antonio Banderas in Best Actor, and of course South Korea and Parasite. To me, this movie wins hands down. There's no argument. I mean, this movie is flawless, and in terms of international appeal, this movie's got it, because poverty and riches appeals to everybody. Craig, what do you think?
Well, I mean, in fairness, I haven't seen any of the others. But, and I mean, Antonio Banderas did get nominated in Pain and Glory. I hear it's an extremely wonderful performance and one of the best, if not the best, of his career. But yeah, I mean, this is pretty obvious, I think. It is interesting, the change of name from foreign language to international feature, because so many of our domestic movies are really hit a large audience internationally.
I
would like to, like, really know the dichotomy, like why they decided to change from foreign language to international feature. But
that's a foreign language,
right?
You know,
well, I mean, the awards
something
are
exotic originally, but
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
now it's like going, let's be a little bit more inclusive. But there's, yeah, but it's a whole political, well, the name change is a political sort of thing, but what can get nominated even for best picture? I was watching some interviews and such that that Parasite was even considered for best picture was questionable because
right.
of yeah. the whole foreign language.
Well, now situation. Here's, so, okay, here.
Is this your question?
I apologize. This is a question. So, international feature. We used to say foreign language. To me, that means non-English. So, when you say now international, does that mean the King's Speech is now up for international, you know, like, does that mean Bohemian Rhapsody? Like, these
British films
made there, these British films, are those now international features? That's the question I would have for the Academy.
1917 is a British film.
1917. Yeah. All right. Just throwing it out to the universe.
I would like to see, like you said, I'd like to see why the change. So, all right. The final three categories, which is probably the three toughest races that Parasite's got going against them. First up, we've got Best Original Screenplay. You've got Knives Out by Ryan Johnson, Marriage Story by Noah Baumbach, 1917 by Sam Mendes, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood by Quentin Tarantino, and Parasite by Bong Joon-ho and Han Joon-hwan. This category's tough.
It's really tough.
I don't know. Brent, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think I understand. I've heard that sometimes politics and political, I mean, as far as industry politics, can come to play in these Oscar award season choices. So you have, and studios and all sorts of, you know, campaigns and various sort of things. But if it's on merit, from the films that I've seen, if it were up to me, I mean, I was a big Quentin Tarantino fan for his script until I saw this film. So I would go with Parasite because it's just a complete film with. It's just a great film, and you've got to start with the words. So,
yeah. I mean, I think any of those that the nominees could really stake a claim at it. You know, Mendes in 1917, it's all about his grandfather's experience in the war. Maybe not necessarily directly, but it is, that's why he decided to do this movie. You know, Knives Out, I have such an affinity for that film. It was only nominated for one award. So in my mind, it's like, just give it that one award. Come on.
You're going to get Knives Out too. So it's all good. So
yeah, that's very true. You're right. And then, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you know, in a previous Two Popes, full disclosure, Ryan, you said that Tarantino is almost a lock for the screenplay Oscars, and it is written really well. And so I think that there's a ton of competition. And then what was the fifth film that I'm missing there?
Marriage Story.
Oh my gosh. Which is one of my favorite films of the year, you know, and Noah Baumbach, he did a beautiful job of writing, through such a tough situation. And like the way that he wrote those characters and, how Adam Driver is seen as almost like the hero of the story until he's not, because he's been physically or not maybe physically, but very emotionally abusive to Scarlett Johansson's character, and like how that's subtly given. And anyway, this is going to be like the screenplay categories for me are this year some of the toughest to predict, and really they all deserve it. So sure, I could say Parasite deserves it here, but I mean, in my heart of hearts, I would go with Knives Out. In my head, I probably would go with Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That's right.
We are going to talk about head versus heart when we talk later. To me, I forgot to mention Christy Wilson Barnes. She also wrote 1917. If I know the Oscars, they very well could spread the wealth. And this is what worries me, because I foresee things happening in Best Picture, Best Director, that is going to kind of negate Quentin Tarantino, but they know that he's going to be a good writer. So that's why here's your Oscar. Don't worry about the other two things, but I can see Parasite winning too. I'm going to say in my head, I'm going to say it's going to be Once Upon a Time, but in my heart, I want Parasite. So we'll see how it goes. Lastly, the final big two that we've got, Best Director for Bong Joon-ho. He's nominated for Parasite, but he's going against Quentin Tarantino, Sam Mendes, Todd Phillips for Joker, and Martin Scorsese for The Irishman. Who? Talk about category stacked. Let's talk to Craig first.
Say at least five of them are good directors, or four of them are good directors. Right. Sorry, Todd. Go back to the hangover.
I agree.
But I'm going to combine this a little bit, and I apologize. I'm breaking your format.
Let's do it.
Combine both. Here's why. So I've been thinking about this all day, because in my mind, 1917 was a lock for Best Picture until I saw Parasite. And of course, I knew that going into it, that this was the competition. I think in the world of giving everybody a trophy at the Oscars, Sam Mendes deserves the recognition for Best Director. He just does. I mean, like 1917 in my mind is, I laughed at it going into it, like, oh, the video games have been doing first person shooter for like 20 years. So maybe movies are going to try it now. It is truly stunning. It is really, really well done and extremely well directed. And then maybe that means that Parasite still needs recognition beyond international feature. And so at that point, maybe I give the edge for Best Picture to Parasite, because I do want to see, this is such a great year for film in my mind. I want to see everyone be given some kind of recognition, and to have a foreign feature or an international feature win Best Picture would be extremely cool in my mind. And, you know, Roma led the way a little bit last year, but in my sense, Roma was extremely, I mean, this is light years beyond Roma. And so it does deserve the recognition that it's getting. So those are kind of my two answers for you. I do appreciate Bong Joon-ho, and I would not be sad if he won, but I think Sam Mendes earned this best directing Oscar. And then maybe we give a Best Picture to Parasite, but we'll see how it all shakes up. Right.
Brett, what are your thoughts? Go ahead and talk about Best Picture and Best Director.
Well, I was just checking the 2020 Directors Guild of America Awards, which maybe the happened GGA's. Last night.
Yep, and yes. Sam won.
Yes, and a lot of times directors win and then their films win.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's that. And probably if there is a consolation prize for Parasite, it will win Best International Film.
They know that's going to happen, right?
Yep. You know, and that's just because I don't, because all of the voting academy votes for Best Picture. And even though they have made inroads into expanding the diversity of the voting academy, they've made non-bold choices in the past, and I don't see them changing that, unfortunately.
You know, just about 365 days ago, they made a non-bold choice. So
yeah, or and, you know, I mean, but it's so disappointing. I've been disappointed, and I just roll my eyes so many times. You know, Brokeback Mountain against Crash, and actually, I mean, I was certainly a La La Land fan. You know, I'm like going, that was just inspirational, and you know, that was a Hollywood movie, but it did not win. Well, it did, now, and then it didn't.
Yeah, it did, and then didn't. The way that it works out with the ranked choice voting in a lot different than any other category, so it's interesting to see. Do you think Parasite is the number two choice for more people than something like a 1917? Because that might bolster it to its victory, because if you – you know, if we assume that things like Jojo Rabbit are not Best Picture, where do those Jojo Rabbit as number one voters go? Do they go to 1917? Do they go to Parasite? Do they go to Little Women? That's where it kind of adds a little bit of intrigue into the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yep. Intrigue. Ooh.
My final thoughts. I mean, you guys nailed it. I think I'm hoping to God this doesn't happen the way it's going to happen, but it will take international, and that's going to have to suffice. You know, I think Mendes is going to be a lock for director, because to do what he did is a feat in and of itself. Him and Roger Deakins gave us a haunting portrait of war. And I feel 1917 will also take up Best Picture, but Parasite could play the spoiler. Like I said previously, Tarantino, he'll get original screenplay, and that'll placate, you know, that audience, but I think that's how it's going to boil down. But we'll find out in 2 weeks from today. So that wraps it up for talking about Parasite. But before we go, we want to let you know of things that we have going on here at the Front Row Network. Craig, go ahead and fill us in on that. at the Hoogan.
Absolutely. We are, the Oscars are going hostless for the second year, and we are hosting you for the second year. You can come to the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield, Illinois on Oscar night, and we will be having some trivia. We'll be giving out some prizes for best dress. If you don't want to dress up, that's okay. You can wear pajamas and still possibly win best dress. Who knows? But we'll be giving, we'll just be having a really good time talking about the Oscars, watching them together. I will comment in the commercial breaks and likely get yelled at or booed like I did last year. But we will also keep the feed live. So there's a lot of front row network folks that are all across the state at this point. And so they will be kind of manning our Twitter accounts. They'll also be, I should say staffing, not manning. They'll be staffing our Twitter accounts. They'll be also on our social media pages. And we will do live updates. We'll go live every break, every commercial break from the Oscars to give you kind of the what's up of the categories that had just happened. And it'll be a really fun night. So it's $10. Come on down and enjoy the time. You can either purchase those tickets online at hcfta.org. You could also call 217-523-ARTS, or you can show up and walk in that day. Although we do appreciate if you buy the tickets in advance, because we're not sure exactly what the seating will be like in the room that we're in.
Thank you, Craig. The front row is also going to be gearing up for Oscar week. We are going to do spotlights on the big eight categories. That's the two screenplays, the two supporting actors, two supporting acting role or lead roles, and then, of course, director and best picture. So you're going to have various insight on kind of what we did tonight, but we're going to go more in depth per category. The front row is also going to do what we did for the Golden Globes and take a stab at who we think is going to win. But we decided to add a spin to that where, like Craig said, we're going to have our head. That's going to be our actual choices. And then we're actually going to show what we wanted in our heart. So we're actually going to be able to guess the actors twice. But whoever has the most correct answers in the head category is our winner. We'll do the updates too while you guys are doing that at the Hoagland Center. Other than that, anything coming? Hoagland Center.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Flashbacks is probably going to be coming back in February with possibly a crossover with Guilty Pleasures, but we're going to be honoring Tremors' 30th birthday. Craig, do we got anything? Craig and Brett, do we have anything from House?
Beyond the Mouse is beyond the mousing all of the time. We have the Oscar episode that, depending on when it drops, will be either before this or after. It'll probably be after this drops, even though we recorded it before, a little behind the podcast. Brett went on a solo adventure back in December. Well, not a solo adventure. You met up with your friend, but you didn't take any of us.
So it's
almost like a solo
someday,
adventure.
Someday, we will get you everyone there, and that will be a great time. And maybe I could even cruise. So, you know, go on a Disney cruise, you know, sometimes so I don't feel so out of place when you talk about Disney cruises. This is not Beyond the Mouse therapy session.
You're right. But, you know, we have a whole swath of things coming up. We have a lot of Disney pictures coming up that we'll be doing full disclosures on. We also really like to dive into the parks, and we'll continue that this year. Also, we have this whole new thing. I don't know if you've heard of Disney Plus, Ryan, but they have a lot of original content on there as well. And we're going to start talking about more of that original content. I'd love to really dig deep into something like the Imagineering story that was just on and just beautifully done. So we're going to see where it goes for us and get through this year. It'll be great.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap it up for us tonight here on the Front Row Network. Thank you for joining us tonight as we looked at one of the best films of the year, Parasite. I am Ryan Lutens, and with me tonight has been...
I'm Brad Rutherford.
I'm Craig McFarland.
Thank you for joining us, and we will see you in the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.